Good morning again, everyone. Thanks again to everybody that is here to participate in this very important process. I appreciate you all taking time out of your day and being here with us on this Monday morning. Good morning to Brad.
Good morning.
Welcome. And I'm going to, again, Margaret will be facilitating, and so we'll turn it over to Margaret now.
Okay, thank you.
And Maddie went to make some more copies of forms because we're almost out, so we'll have more coming. And so, Brad, you get about 10 minutes to just introduce yourself or whatever you want to say to staff. And then I have written questions, but throughout the last time, there were people that raised their hand in between questions that wanted to just ask verbal questions. So you can call on them if you want. I'll call on them if we want to take those questions. So
go for it.
All right, thanks. So first, thank you for everybody that did show up. I didn't know this. Might seem a little awkward to some of us since we've worked together for a year and a half, but I'm sure there's things you don't know about me that you might want to know. I don't know. So I think if you've read my resume or whatever, you probably know some of this, so I'll apologize. But I'll give a little bit of background of where I think I gained my managerial experience and a little bit of education. I think most of you know I have a biology degree and a PhD in environmental science and resources. I did look online today to see Portland State is changing to environmental science and management, which would be better for this job process, but that's the way it goes. They didn't tell me that they were going to change it. With that education, I've spent about 10 years as a research scientist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Started out as obviously a field biologist and just moved up through that process, running small science crews up to bigger projects until finally there were multi-million dollar projects with 20 or so people on the projects, ranging from professional scientists to mechanics, engineers, et cetera. Then I somehow got a wild hair, decided to sell my house and travel around for about a year and a half, which was great. I do not regret that. And it made me decide it was time to settle down, raise a family, and I chose Haines to come to do that. In Haines, it was a career rebuilding process. There's not a lot of research science jobs in Haines. There are some fisheries biologist jobs, but hard to break into, obviously. So I worked for the tribe, the Chilkoot tribe, for a while as a grant writer. We did really well there, so then I moved into the science director. I hate to throw out that title because there was never a clear title of what I had there. I still wrote grants for people and ran their science program. I moved to the Watershed Council after that. The tribe had some instability for a little bit, and it was time to move on. Ran the Watershed Council, Talk Chinook Watershed Council, was great. And then there was a regional organization that we were working with, and when that director left, I stepped up to run that regional organization, and that consisted of managing smaller watershed councils throughout Southeast Alaska. So I would provide fiscal sponsorship and management to watershed councils or associations. They all had different names, but on Prince of Wales, Juneau, Wrangell, Skagway, and even back to Toshik and Haines for a while. And with that, that's kind of all of those provided opportunity to work with different types of people, whether they were scientists, community outreach, garden program people, which I would have never thought I would have managed somebody that ran a garden. I used to hate gardens. Now, I was rototilling a garden yesterday and smiling about it because I had to. So it just continued, and it's developed how I feel like I deal with people and how I try to provide guidance to them. And I want to just hit a little bit, and sometimes I cringe when you hear people interview and say, this is my management style, but I'm going to hit on it anyway. And I think what I really like to do is hear what people have to say, hear their opinions, especially when department heads come or community members come, listen through the process and help guide them in a way that is going to be productive in their ideas or for the community. And if it can't happen, then I want to provide them a reasonable explanation of why it can't happen. It may not be satisfactory to them, but I like to listen and not jump to a conclusion. I'm not heavy-handed. I would bet nobody's heard me yell that works for the borough, except for maybe Sean Bell, because you know my kids and his kids like to fight in the yard together. So maybe Sean, but But I like to stay calm, understand the issues, and provide the guidance to help people be successful. And I think that's inspirational because you're giving them confidence. And I always look back at the people I've worked for, and there's one boss that I had that changed how I tried to work as a supervisor. And it was when I was working for NOAA. I was pretty young at managing crews, and I couldn't get everything done. I was awake all the time. I was trying to do the data management. I was trying to run the boats. I was trying to do the analysis. And I had these very capable crew members, but I didn't know how to inspire them to do something. They were hired to do this job, and Earl was my boss. He's like, hey, you tell Linda she can do the data management. Okay. And you tell Melissa she can drive the boats. Okay. So I go to them, no confidence at all in my voice, didn't believe it, and said, could you drive the boat and do the data management? They knew I didn't believe they could do that. And I called Earl back and was like, yeah, they said they can't do it. They're not coming. I was like, oh, man, you know. So Earl there's silence. He comes up a week later, sits down, and says, hey, you're going to drive the boat. You're going to do data management. And they both just stepped up and said, great. And they did a wonderful job. I never had any issues with them. They were totally capable. But it was the way he said, you can do it. And he believed it. And you know, I don't give inspirational talks to people. It's believing what you tell them with confidence. And he did that to me about 3 or 4 times before I finally realized the hesitation in my voice, the lack of belief in the people was why they weren't stepping up. And I think when you come to me, I hope as staff, you come to me, we can talk through it. And if I say, I think you can believe it, do it. I hope you believe that that's true. And that's my goal. And if I really think there's a real problem, I hope I say there's a real problem and this is how we should get around. That's how I like to manage. I'm not heavy-handed at all. Sometimes people are like, oh, you know, you're just listening too much and not speaking enough. I don't think that's true. I try to listen and I try to make a good decision. And with that, I don't have much more to say about myself. I'd like to hear what you have to ask me about, questions you have for me. And I don't know if you want to read some first or somebody wants to follow up right away.
Sure, we'll start reading some, and then if somebody has questions, they'll raise their hand. So, and these are all from staff.
Okay.
What do you feel are the most essential duties of the Haynes Borough Manager?
I think the most essential duty is to take guidance from the assembly that hopefully has come from the community, and then provide that direction to staff on how to fulfill the roles, their roles to provide what the community is asking through the assembly. I think that's the primary function of the borough manager.
Please describe your experience supervising a staff, and especially describe your experience supervising a staff of supervisors.
Okay.
And the maximum number of people you supervise.
Okay. I think the Haynes Borough is where I've supervised the most supervisors as department heads, by far. Depending on which role I'm in and whether I've been the director of public facilities or the interim borough manager, somewhere between 5 and 6 department heads. I'd have to count them to be exact on that one. So that's by far the most supervisors I've had to supervise, and it's been about, well, I've been here for 1.5 years in both different, just over 1.5 years. As far as like directly trying to supervise people, probably the most people I've tried to supervise at one time is up to 20. And that was with NOAA, and those were scientists, field crews, boat operators, a lot of times big tagging crews. And usually, even at that many, you try to find someone who can say, all right, they're the person in charge of the tagging crew. You always try to give somebody the responsibility, because directing 20 people becomes an impossibility. So you want to have people that are following through on your directions. So that's the most I was charged with, but even then I tried to help delegate that authority.
Okay.
Yeah, Leslie.
I'm not sure if we're asking the same questions of each candidate, but I wanted to on my questions. That Haynes kind of has a reputation and does have a high turnover rate with staff, with manager, economic development director, and police. What is your input on how to resolve that?
That's a good question. I know that there's, obviously I know there's a high turnover rate. When I took the job for the Haynesboro, a few of my friends said, yep, you'll be moving in a year. It's like, I don't believe that. I think you have to come in, you have to be as forthcoming as you can, and you have to be able to listen to your staff and address their needs. And hopefully, if you're in the manager's position, you can be there long enough to have the history so that when issues come up, you can be like, this is how it got handled before, let's not do that again. This, you know, this is a better path. I think we just had a meeting about Brewfest, and there were a lot of things when I was sitting in the seat last year that stirred up some problems with the police and Brewfest. And this year we were able to say, no, let's not go there. We sorted this out. I think bringing history and bringing a calm, mediated approach to things is how you keep staff around so that they don't feel attacked all the time and they can feel comfortable in their positions and comfortable bringing stuff to you. You don't have to get excited every time something comes to you and blow it up. Instead, let's stay calm, work through it. How can we get the best solution without blowing this up into a big, excitable situation?
Yes. Okay. How do you or would you separate your personal relationships from your duties as manager?
I think I have to do that every day. I go to work and I'm charged with doing the job. The direction is set by the borough, it's set by the assembly. I may want a giant slip and slide or a rec gym, and somebody else may want something else to go on in town. That's not for me to make that decision. The community's made that decision. And you go to work, you make that happen. You don't do things that are unethical, obviously, but if you're charged to do something from the borough, you're charged to do it. I think when I took this job, there were a lot of people who were like, oh, he's just an environmentalist, he's not gonna push any projects, he's never gonna make anything happen. At that time, letters written that I was gonna, about me, that I was gonna stop all progress. And one of the guys that was on the toxic board said to the same person, no, he'll do what he's charged to do as long as it's not unethical or wrong. And that's how I take my marching orders and I move forward. It's not that I won't work for what I think is the best solution, but if that's what the borough and the assembly has decided, then that's what you do. Dina?
Deborah the same question, but we don't have a human resources officer. And in borough code, it shows that one of the manager responsibilities is to be the personnel officer. And there wasn't any definition of what that means. And for employees who have situations or issues and want to talk to somebody, there's really no place for that employee to go. As a manager, you oversee departments, and that means you supervise those department heads. So that means if one of your employees that you're overseeing or managing has issues, where do they go?
The department heads themselves.
Department heads or staff of the department head that you're supervising.
I think it's a challenge that we don't have a human resources department. I think the short tenure of borough managers is also a challenge, because as they get to that ability to manage it and understand the human resources aspect of the job, they're quite often gone. So I think that's a real challenge, and I think it's something that any borough manager that's there should be constantly trying to learn and train themselves in. Some department heads are union employees, and so they can go to the union, and that's, you know, kind of the role of the union is to help employees engage their employer, make sure their employee standards are being met. Outside of that, the unfortunate part for people that report directly to the manager and don't have the union, it is a little one-sided, and so you have to be really, really aware of that. There's not a great answer other than, you know, trying to work, you know, positively back and forth between us. I mean, it's rare that there's people in that situation, but they are there, and that's challenging. I won't deny that.
It would just be, I think it's been an issue for a while, and I just wish there was some kind of, there's no policy on it. There's nothing, you know, it's like, it's a black hole as far as, you know, myself and other employees feel like there's no outlet for us.
Mm-hmm. And you have a department head and the union, which is even gets a little more complicated.
But ultimately, you're the personnel officer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
so
I think
we'll be the personnel officer.
And I agree, the lack of a human resources department is a challenge that we should figure out how to address.
What is your philosophy of working with current staff and hiring new staff when you hire new staff?
I think I hit on it earlier as far as working with current staff. I like my staff to feel free to come in and talk to me, bring issues to me, and feel comfortable bringing issues to me and knowing that even if they just want to come in and say, this is the issue, but let's not talk about it right now, but just want to talk through things. I want people to feel comfortable enough that almost like a counselor when they come in, staff especially. If I can help them, I will. If I can't, I'll tell them why I cannot help. I also want to be there for them. I want to be the buffer between problems they have. If they're having a community member problem, somebody's coming in and yelling them, I always try to tell staff, don't let people yell at you. Get up and walk away, come see me. I won't let people yell at me. I'll walk away if I have to. I'm not a fist fight kind of person. I never like to get hit. I like to stay calm, and I want to keep it calm. And I haven't had that many people yell at me, honestly, and I try not to escalate it. I heard earlier encounters with managers where there's a lot of yelling and yelling back by the manager. I don't agree with that at all. So I want staff to be able to come to me as a resource, either to get them what they need if I can, or to provide a buffer if I need to, and just a conduit for any issue they have. As for hiring, I think we advertise for positions and we hire the most qualified person. I think that's how we should always hire. You hire the person that has the best qualifications and attitude for the job. You gotta have a good work history, you have to have a good attitude, and you have to be qualified to do the job. And those three things, I think, are key for hiring. Outside of that, I wouldn't hire any other way.
Question?
Okay.
Leslie?
What is your input on our lack of an economic development department head, or if you support filling it with a HEDC, how do you see the manager and the borough working with?
Well, we have, obviously, you know, we have an economic development tax and tourism tax, and I was also part of the HEDC board for a while, so I do support the HEDC avenue for economic development. I think it's a good way to send somebody out there to pursue economic development that can do it kind of without the confines of the borough. I think they can do a good job that way, and I may not have felt that way, but you know, having listened to Skagway come to town and talk about their economic development and their success, that was really what kind of got me in the boat, I would say, for economic development. Also, I think the last product that I saw from HEDC is what I would like to see coming from them in the future, which is a list of what they're going to do or how they're going to address economic development in Haines. And if they don't meet some of those objectives, some number of them, we shouldn't continue to fund them. So that, you know, they should be collecting statistics on, you know, communities or sectors of the community that would need economic development, qualify for grants, that's just block grants. And I think it needs to be done on a quarterly basis. You have to check in with them, just like an RFP to a nonprofit. You don't just say, oh, here's some money, go do something nonprofit. You say, this is what we want done. We want economic development in the fishing industry, or we want economic development for the Main Street businesses. And you show us how you do it. And if you don't show us, then we're not going to continue to fund the Economic Development Corporation. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, get ready. This is challenging.
Here we go.
what will, if the other candidate is hired, Deborah Schnabel, what would she bring to the borough manager position that you can't?
Holly, man. Well, Deborah's got a lot of knowledge. Obviously, she's worked for a chamber a long time. She's probably has more business ties than I do. She's lived here all, if not, I think, all of her life. I don't know that for sure. And Deborah's a very direct person. She's going to have a different management style. And that's fine. It's not necessarily a negative. It's not mine. So I think she has qualities that are not mine that she'll bring that I want. She's very direct. And I think she has more business ties than I do.
Okay.
Heathrow employees are paid. Oh, I'm sorry.
Now we should say what he brings that she doesn't bring. Okay. Well, whatever she said, just put the name down.
Would you like to ask a question?
I want to say it seems like it naturally follows that she asked what Deborah would bring that he doesn't bring, but he can say what he brings that Deborah doesn't bring. So flip the question around.
You want me to flip the question around?
Consider it flipped.
Okay, it's flipped. I will say, I'm going to answer Chris. I'm going to give Chris the question. What would I bring that Deborah doesn't? And I think what I hit on was earlier. I'm calm. I like to bring things down. I like to not get them excited. I think I can bring a lot of people together. I think I'm really good at mediating situations when they're excited, and I listen to the surrounding environment, what people want. I think that's what I bring to the Deborah Wood.
Heathrow employees are paid well below the median wages for municipal employees. As I said before, I didn't fact check this question. But as a manager, you will represent the interests of the Haines residents through the assembly. Do you think it is in the best interest of Haines residents to pay borough employees fair wages?
I do think it's in the best interest to pay borough employees fair wages. That with this group, how could I not say that? but we went through union negotiations last year, and we spent a lot of time looking at what other communities were paying employees in Southeast Alaska specifically, and trying to address those issues, because turnover costs a lot of money. And turnover also doesn't just cost money, but it causes kind of mayhem in the organization. I just took care of a permit for the right-of-way for the Porcupine Road from 2006. And I don't think anybody wasn't doing their job. It just got lost. And then I get hired and I get an email that says, we're gonna take the Porcupine Road away from you if you don't get a DNR easement. It did cross my mind that we shouldn't get the easement, that's because it was right after we fixed it. But the reality is, those kind of things get dropped and nobody even knows it. Like, who had it? They're gone. Oh, they were gonna take care of it. So paying a fair wage, treating your employees well, and maintaining them is how you're successful as an organization. I think, look at the big organizations that are successful, and their employees usually love them. And they're there for a reason, because they're being treated respectful, they're being paid fair, and they put value into their employment.
And so, follow up to that, how do you view the role of unions, and what is your experience?
Well, I just mentioned we went through the union negotiation a year ago. I deal with the union quite often. Unions are there on a basic level to say, these are the employment standards you provided. You need to meet those at a minimum. I think that's an easy way to define a union. But I think more importantly, when you think about unions, it's easy to look at unions as an employer and go, oh, unions, they're problematic, blah, 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 blah. But it's only when you're a good employer that you think that. And your employees feel that. But unions are there so that when someone is being discriminated against, treated unfairly, a number of things that they know they have a right to, they can speak up without thinking they're gonna get fired. And that's really, really important, because otherwise you can have this person working for you who's just not happy at all, So they're not doing a good job, but yet they can't speak up because the real problem is they're being, you know, taken advantage of or discriminated against. So a union provides that individual the right to speak up and hopefully solve a problem that you have in your organization. And otherwise, you can just be like, you know, the good old days of, oh, that guy complained, he's just a whiner, we don't want him anymore. Like, and they just kind of shuffle him out or pick on him until they're gone. And the poor kid that just came in can't speak up to get the respect that he deserves or she deserves to grow into a good quality employee.
All right, this was a combination of several questions with the same theme. So, how do you view the manager's role in staff evaluations? Do you have any recommendations about the evaluation process? And what is your experience in dealing with evaluations and grievances?
At the borough, I've gone through two evaluations of staff. I also used to do this for NOAA. It was a little looser at NOAA because of where we were at in the hierarchy of evaluations. So mostly I saw evaluations come down. But I think evaluations are really important, not just because you want to give somebody a raise or not give somebody a raise. It's your time that you're forced, and this is really, really hard to do because people, it's uncomfortable to give constructive criticism. Say, guess what? This, you're doing a great job, but if you did this, you'd be doing an even better job, or more importantly, maybe the borough would be better off and you would be happier. And so I think you have to do them. I think sit down and talk about them. It's challenging, but it's very, very important to do. I try to make them simple. I don't like big long forms, mostly because what I really want for my evaluation is somebody's gonna evaluate me to sit me down and say, this is why you're doing a good job over here and this is how you can improve. And you have to do that with your staff to make them feel good. Some people just naturally do it all the time throughout the year, and so it doesn't seem like it's necessary. But it's when you avoid it is when it's a problem. You know that person's a problem. Oh, just don't want to do it. So you can't do it every week or month. That's when you need to force the staff evaluations. It's usually when it's not happening is the time it needs to happen.
Questions right now? Okay. So this is about communication. It talks about how do you communicate with staff and how will you ensure clear communication between the assembly staff and department heads?
I like to talk to staff as much as possible. I like to go see them in their workplace when I can. Usually starts with something casual. I think it's always good to start out just, how's your day? What'd you do this weekend? Because a lot of times it just makes everybody more comfortable and you roll into what's really going on at work. We still have the, you know, as far as department heads, we still have the Thursday morning check-ins. I like to listen. Some people say I listen too much and don't talk enough in those, but that's what I'm there for, is to hear and hopefully provide feedback. I also like to bring and make things as upfront as possible, so that the assembly knows what we're doing, the staff knows that their concerns are being brought to the assembly. I always provide them opportunities in the manager's update to put whatever they want in there. If they don't, I try to dig for some details as well. To me, it's not trying to hold things, it's trying to be open with them. I've had at least one department head say, wow, you kind of air everything. Past managers have held it tight. I want to air everything. I want to if I can. You know, if I can't, for certain reasons, that's fine. I'll hold them tight. But for the most part, I want them to come out. I don't want to have a hidden agenda. I don't want staff to have a hidden agenda. I want everybody to know where we stand and be clear.
Okay. This was a fun question. The Haynesboro has a reputation for having hotheads on all sides of the issues. And you've talked about this a little bit, but what is your experience, specific experiences that show you can keep a cool head in times of stress?
Well, I guess the one that was the most public in town for me was when Park and Rec put out the proposal to get rid of all motorized use. Only joking, they didn't really. But that was where it started. And so people were really fired up, and they showed up to the library, 150 of them is my understanding of the count. And they were upset, and I understood that, and I believe I stood up and helped calm that situation by providing the people that were upset the opportunity to make a comment and talk. They were there, they got to be heard, and it calmed the situation down. I think some of them looked pretty fired up. It could have went the other way. Everybody could have started yelling and throwing chairs or whatever. But instead, just being calm, not getting excited, and again, I keep hitting on this, but letting people be heard is really, really important. And that is probably the most public situation I've had here doing that.
Anybody have any other questions?
How would you, do you, deal with community criticisms against a department or department head?
First, I want to hear the criticism. I want to know what it is. Is it well-founded? Is there something else that I'm not aware of? Trying to figure out what all the reasons are to start with is important. And then I want to talk to the department head and understand what they're feeling. Why are they being criticized? Why do they think they're being criticized? And are these criticisms legitimate or not? And then depending on that, I just like to gently nudge. If a department head thinks they can improve their public view, just gently nudge them along so we can get away from that criticism and work towards a solution that's good for both the department and the community. I think that's key. If there's some irreconcilable difference, then I guess I'd have to weigh in and decide what's legitimate, and if we had to go against the department head, I would explain to them why we had to go against the department head. If we didn't, and there's a compromise, then we would do that.
Okay. Anybody? All right. How do you define executive management? I think this comes from the job description.
I don't know if I do. I'm sorry that I don't know that I have a definition for executive management. I guess that's what I'm in. I'm managing the head executive of the borough staff, and I manage the staff as I've gone through with you. I don't know if I have a real definition for that.
How do you view the role of the borough government in keeping the cost of government down while providing the services residents view as important?
Can you read that one?
How do you view the role of the borough government in keeping the cost of government down while providing the services residents view as important?
I think with the borough, any organization, having people cross-trained in as many duties as allowable with your employee staff is a good way to keep costs down. And making sure that staff show up and want to do a good job because they feel rewarded. You get a lot more done if you show up, direction's clear, you know you're viewed positively for doing it, and on top of it, you're helping out your fellow employees. So if Sean Bell's a good example. He's working as the director of public facilities right now. He can always step in now and make that role work. He also knows the harbor inside now. So if Gabe ever has an issue, he can help Gabe. That is working so smoothly right now. And when Sean's out, I can step in and understand the job. And so I think having that kind of redundancy in employment helps keep the costs down. It can help keep the number of employees you need to have something down. It also keeps the employees happy because they have somebody to engage with, bounce things off, it makes you more efficient, and I think it'll keep the costs down.
Right. How would you handle politically sensitive issues with staff?
I think we do it all the time. I think it's been going on ever since I've been there. You try not to air things that are inappropriate or unnecessary. Stick to the facts. You know, don't make a bunch of statements you don't know about. I think Dave Sosa gave good advice. If someone calls you on a politically sensitive issue and it's in your expertise, then you provide the information that's in your expertise. If somebody calls me and it's tourism and it's a politically sensitive issue, I would refer to Leslie because she knows tourism and it's her issue that she knows better than me. I think when it's politically sensitive, you have to make sure you're sticking to the facts. You always should, but you gotta be even more careful about it. But if it's in your expertise and that's what you do, then you provide the information that's appropriate.
What would you do if what would you do if the assembly asked you to pursue a course of action that you were convinced was not in the best interest of the borough?
As I said earlier, if I think it's not in the best interest of the borough, it doesn't mean it's right. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm right. It could completely just be a difference of opinion. If it's unethical, I wouldn't do it. However, if it's within it's not unethical and the assembly is saying this is what we need to do, then that's what I'm charged to do. I'm not arrogant enough to think that my opinion is always right. There's plenty of people in this borough that have different opinions than me, and if the majority of them want to go this direction and I want to go that direction, as the borough, that is my job, is to go the direction that the assembly is charged.
Questions? We've already asked all the other ones, so we're kind of going into uncharted territory here.
I have a question. Do you have plans, if you get the job, for training and management and do you have ways that you think you can grow and that you would be a better manager as a result of? Are there things that you've identified that you'd like to learn more about?
Absolutely. I'm looking around quite a bit at what I would do to continue my education as a manager if I was hired as that. I think one of the first things I asked Dave Sosa when I was hired as the Director of Public Facilities is, do you provide professional development? Because I don't want to be in a position where there isn't professional development, at least embraced. And so, I mean, UAS obviously has a program. There's plenty of human resources classes out there. I think there's a lot of options that I would like to explore.
Oh, go.
I do have another one. There have been rumors, I've heard things that was about personnel, that there's a bit of favoritism, that if you know someone, you tend to favor them, and that maybe the process isn't always clear how people are getting promoted or how people are getting dealt with. And so how would you address that? How would you make sure that you are egalitarian in terms of how you're approaching your staff? Because you have staff that are liberal, conservative, female, male, young, old. So how do you approach that? They're all very different.
They are all very different. You're correct. I think, as I said before, most positions have to be advertised. And I hope that we're advertising when somebody is being promoted, that we're hiring the person that truly is, does the best in the interview, does the best, has the best track record, has the right attitude for the job. And I can't remember how many hires I've been involved in this time. We've always had a committee. And I think that's really important. And if I'm involved in the committee, I want there to be a good mix of who it is. I mean, I helped Dean hire his field data collectors, and there was Sheila and Dean and I on that. And I think I was actually the mix that was added to that one. And that was a good process. We didn't end up, it took a little bit because our top two candidates got other jobs, or actually one with the borough, and the other one didn't want the job. But I think having a committee is always important. I think having a scoring sheet so that you can't just, you know, railroad through it and knowing why you're going in to that job and what you think is important before you hire is key. And outside of that, I mean, that's how I want to see people get hired and promoted.
Okay, we only have about two written questions left. So I'll ask one of them and then see if there's any more verbal questions, and then we'll end on the same one we did last time. So this is talking about how managers interact with departments and visiting departments. And how do you see yourself in terms of going out to each facility? How do you approach this? Do you think it's important to visit each facility regularly? If so, how often? How do you approach that?
Visiting departments?
Facilities.
Okay. But, I thought you said visiting departments.
Well, has to deal with, yeah, it said visited some departments, but then it also talks about going out to each facility.
I think it's very, I think I said this earlier, it's really important to go see your department heads in their comfort zone, whether that's a facility, the museum, the library, the harbor, you know, even going out to Kalahini Valley Fire Department. I think it's very important to do that. I think you get the respect when you show up. You feel like you care, and you should care, and that's why you show up. I know my first day on the job as the Director of Public Facilities, I showed up at the sewer plant, and I did it specifically, because I hate the sewer plant. And Scott said, wow, it took a year for one manager to show up there. I was the Director of Public Facilities, so I knew I had to show up anyway. But yeah, I think you should do it as often as you can and still get your job done. It's important to go. It's important to go to functions that they're having, too. If the library's having a function and the museum, and I know, Helen, I fall down on that sometimes. I try. Absolutely. There's only one way to really find out how things are working and how people feel is to show up at their place in their comfort zone so they can tell you what's happening, what's going on. And if you don't do that, you're missing the boat by a long shot. Yeah, Tina.
The manager, like I said earlier, oversees departments and their department head, and manager does evaluations of those department heads. Mm-hmm. If you get the manager job and you have to start doing those evaluations, how is your approach taken on that? Do you yourself alone just evaluate that department head without talking to any of that department head staff? Do you, you know, how do you view that?
Yeah, I see where you're going with that. At this point, I have done the evaluations, and I've done it just based on what I observe. I haven't gone to their staff and asked for a review of them. It's an interesting idea to have go to the staff and ask them, but it puts them in an awkward situation. Because if you say, oh, I don't like my supervisor, and then I go back, then it's uncomfortable. It wouldn't hurt my feelings, and I think it might be a good direction, depending on the department, because the department may only have two people, to have a staff evaluation that's anonymous. I know in past jobs, I've always encouraged my staff to provide me a review, and I don't want to know who it is. I want an anonymous review. The problem is when you have a small staff, it's challenging. If you only have one person and their review is a department head, it's problematic. But maybe with some of the bigger departments, that would be a good direction to go and have a conversation about. I know if I was manager, I would want my department heads to review me. Because there's really, and I want it to be anonymous, because there's no way for me to know, unless somebody's just brutally honest, how they view my performance. And I think it's a huge mistake not to have your staff.
Just to follow, I think one of the problems is that if you're not a department head and you're just an employee, you don't have an opportunity really to give input. Mm-hmm. You really don't. I mean, I'm just talking because I'm one of them.
Yeah.
And I think the employees get ignored a lot of the time. They don't have an opportunity to give input on a lot of stuff. We want to talk to our assembly members. We think about standing up at an assembly meeting and saying something, but we don't want the repercussions of that going back to work the next day. I just feel like sometimes the employees don't have an avenue to give input on anything. The department heads certainly do a lot of times, but the staff. You know, when you say staff, I don't consider myself staff. I think managers get into that position and in their mind, staff is department heads. Staff is not everybody. So whoever gets in the manager position, I really, really, really hope that every employee, not just department heads, get an opportunity to give input and be able to have the opportunity to get heard and without the fear of repercussion. It's just...
And I think... I understand we're obviously we work together and I know where you're at.
Yeah.
Every department head has a different relationship and every staff. I know all of like the public works and the, and I shouldn't speak for them, but you know, water and sewer and facilities, they certainly still don't have a problem coming and telling me outside of their department head what I'm doing wrong. Right? And I want them to do that. Like I look for that. But I had a relationship with them as a department head, so it's maybe easier for them because I had that relationship beforehand. They certainly walk in a lot and say, "You've done this wrong." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." But museum staff never to speak of because I haven't worked with their staff directly, and so you know they report to Helen and see that more as a problem. So maybe that's something we should try to work around.
If a staff person comes to you with a complaint about their supervisor or some issue, how would you address that?
It's happened more than once. And I try to talk to them and say, let's take this to your supervisor and try to work through this. I think the worst thing I can do is be like, oh, that's great. Like, yeah, I understand your department head's really bad. Like, no, it's talk to them, work with their department head to improve that situation. And try to find out, is this an just a personality conflict, or is this something that's totally out of line? It's different if, say, I don't know, Little John punches somebody. Okay, well, we're going to address that right away, right? And I only use Little John because he doesn't care. But, you know, that's different than Little John saying, Will's making a mistake on trenching. Okay, let's sit down and talk about that. But, yeah, I think you have to talk to the employee and talk to their supervisor together and sort it out, if they're willing to come together, and otherwise you'll have to force them to come together.
Are there any other further questions? Otherwise I'll ask the last one. Anybody? Okay, final question. Why should the employees recommend you as the next manager?
I would say the employees should only recommend me as the next manager if they're happy with how I'm working with them. They're not, they should. And I completely believe that.
Okay. I didn't offer this to Deborah, but she did say a few words afterwards. So do you have anything you want to wrap up with? Otherwise, we'll wrap up.
I just appreciate everybody coming out. And either way, we'll still be working together. So thank you.
Thank you, Brian.